Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
This too. Okay. Yamagnushnyavan nitya bodha swarupam. Yamagnushnyavan nitya bodha swarupam. Manaschakshuradinya bodhatmakani. Manaschakshuradinya bodhatmakani. Pravartanta ashritya nishkampamekam. Pravartanta ashritya nishkampamekam. Sanityo palabdhi swarupo hamatma. Sanityo palabdhi swarupo hamatma. Yam agni ushnavat nitya bodha swarupam. Manaha chakshuhu adini abhodatmakani pravartante ashritya nishkampam ekam saha nitya upalabdhi swarupaha aham atma. So Hastamalika continues and again says, I am that Atma, I am that Self, whose Swarupa, whose nature is Nitya Upalabdhi. Nitya Upalabdhi means changeless, timeless, free from time, consciousness. So this conscious being that I am that one whose nature is timeless, conscious being. Timeless means changeless, not objectifiable. This me that I am, impossible to change. That's why it's so nice for you to recognize yourself. Because once you recognize yourself, and that's it. You will never change. This being that you are is the being that you are, always have been, always will be. Nothing ever happens. Nothing ever happens to you. So here, so he always starts, he ends his shloka with this, I am that Self, I am that Atma, whose nature is changeless, timeless consciousness. Whom, he says, so he goes on. Depending upon whom, I am that conscious Self, depending upon whom, the mind, the eyes, this manaschakshuradini we saw in the previous verse, the mind, the eyes, the organs of action, all of these depend upon. Depend, so ashritya, depending upon whom my mind, my eyes, pravartante, they proceed, they act, they do what they do. Pravartante means they go forward doing whatever they do. But they do whatever they do depending on me, because this, the mind, the eyes, etc., etc., means the organs of action, etc. All of these instruments that are at my disposal, all of them are abodha atmakani. All of them, by their nature, they're for them, each one of them, is abodha. Means inert. It itself, they themselves don't enjoy any consciousness. From their own standpoint, they're abodha. You know, in Sanskrit, when you take any given word in Sanskrit, like bodha, bodha means knowledge or consciousness. If you put an a before it, it negates it. So bodha would be knowledge or consciousness. Abodha would be inert, not enjoying consciousness. Or if I were to say Atma, if it begins with a vowel, Atma, then I'd say Anatma, that which is not the self. Or Icha, that which is desirable or desired. Anicca, Anicca, that which is not desired. And so here, Bodha, Abodha, Abodhatmakani. So Manas is a neuter noun. Chakshu, Manas Chakshuradini is neuter. So we have Abodhatmakani. It's a neuter endings. So what it says here is, I am that conscious being, that timeless conscious being, Ashritya, depending on whom. So it says more. I am that desireless, that changeless, timeless, conscious being who is nishkampam ekam. The conscious being that I am is ekam. Ekam means one. This idea of being one, it's also the idea of Advaita, but let's look at it non-dual, but let's look at it this way, as one. Even in reference to your mind is comprised of many, many, many thoughts. It is certainly not one. It has many thoughts, it has many emotions, many feelings, many ideas, many images, many, many memories. So the mind itself, you could never say the mind is one. Rather, it's a conglomerate of many, many, many different types of vrittis, of different types of thought modifications, true all, presenting themselves one at a time, but it's really associative thinking, so it's comprised of so many thoughts. Your eyes, your ears, your sense organs, all are more than one. I have five sense organs, I have five organs of action, all of these, five is me really putting it in very big, wide, broad strokes. And then I have this body that is made of so many parts, doing so many things. So all of these, this body, mind, sense organs, all of them are for sure a conglomerate of many parts. I am not a conglomerate. Myself is not made of many parts. Myself is one. You don't have self A over here and self B over here and self, you know, C over here and self D over here. There's only you. There's only this one me, this one self that illumines this instrument, the physical body and mind and sense organs, which itself is comprised of countless parts, right? And so, though the body is many, the mind is many in terms of parts, etc., I am only one. And then this one, this ekam that I am, is also nishkampam. It is not scurrying around. You know? My mind is scurrying around. My sense organs, my eyes are scurrying around. They never stay the same. It's not like, I mean, whenever I make them the same in class, it's a joke. You know, like, your eyes are continually moving. Your ears are continually changing. You know, their perceptions or what they're focusing on. It's continually scurrying movement. There's continual movement in every part of your body. It's not nishkampam. Your body, nishkampam means free from any type of change or activity. It's what is absolutely still. And even that is not the correct way to talk about yourself. Because if I say, oh, you're absolutely still, it makes me think, if I say that, like my body, if you think of your body as nishkampam, then you kind of being as absolutely still as you possibly can. You're making effort, nishkampam. You're making effort to be still. Or you're making effort to make your mind nishkampam. It is not naturally nishkampam. Right? It is not naturally still. It is not naturally without any motion. So to say that yourself is absolutely still, to me, gives kind of a verbal sense. I'm holding it absolutely still. It's that I'm holding my being to be absolutely still. That isn't what it is. Your being is stillness itself. There's no possibility of your being not being still, not being even steady. If you use the word steady, it's like going on at the same pace. It's holding steady. You are not holding steady. Your very swarupa, your very nature, is simply still. Sometimes I use the word, which also has funny connotations, but you could say, you are solid. Your being is so solid. It can't move. It's not that it can't move, it wants to move, but it can't move. It can't move because it has no place to move. Because there's no place where it isn't. You know? If we think of time and space itself as belonging to the universe, as I said, you know, in your, like in your dream or in your imagination, it's not just the objects that come, it's time and space itself. The universe includes time and space. The objectifiable world, anything that you can objectify by nature includes time and space. Right? I'm trying to imagine objectifying just one thing that is free of time and space. It's really not possible. All things exist within time and space. So the whole creation, when you think of the creation or all that is within duality, you have to include time and space. But time and space, like the rest of the creation, are objectifiable. Right? You are not objectifiable. You're not an object in time and space. But what if I remove time and space and all objectification from my being? If time and space comes from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me, I myself am free of time and space. That being so, and I'm not non-existent, I am, where am I going to move? How can I move? What are my boundaries? There's no space. There's only me. Where am I not? For there to be some place that I am not, I have to enter into time and space in order to say, I'm here and not here. Right? Now I'm here, but I'm not here. But if there is no space for me, there's only me, my own conscious being, where is here and where is there without space? Where is, without space, being big or being small? Or being heavy or being light? Or even being red or being brown or being black or being yellow or being white? How do these words and concepts even apply to me? And so when we say a word like nishkampam, I am absolutely free of change, because anything that would have to do with change or movement or motion, right, belongs to the creation, it belongs to duality. And so my being is effortlessly still. It's one way. Effortlessly still by its very nature, and also, even would it want to move, where would it move to? So if you get rid of time and space, then what size are you, and what are your boundaries, and what are your borders? It's a really, sometimes we talk, we have to realize this in contemplation, or just with, when you're with your, just being with yourself. Someone once described your being as kind of an infinite point. A point, by definition, doesn't take up any space at all. Right? But what if the point takes up no space, but it's an infinite point? When you say infinite point, what's beautiful about that is that that point, because it takes up no space, it has no size, but there is nothing else, because infinite. When you call yourself, say yourself as an infinite point, just close your eyes for a minute, I'll show you. Just close your eyes, just relax. And now just think of me, just me, your own very personal self, just your own being. Don't worry about your thoughts or any perceptions, that doesn't make any difference. They don't cover you at all. Just your own me. And I just noticed that, if I were to ask, well, what size are you? Are you small? Are you big? I think the best way to answer that is that, you know, these words, they don't apply. I'm not small. I'm not big, but not small. What color are you? Words don't apply. How tall are you? Meaningless. Notice how solid, strong, solid without being solid, strong without being strong, changeless without being changeless. You simply are. You simply are. Your being is. And it is one. Try to make it two. Imagine just your own presence dividing into two. And be, hello, hello, hello. No. So Ekam, Nishkampam, and you are consciousness. You're not away from consciousness. You're not inert. Your being is self-shining. Just notice that. And that shining nature is Nityam. See if you can make it change to be subject to time. So Hastamalika says, this is who I am. Shankar is happy. Okay. Spoon. Can open your eyes. So Hastamalika says, my mind and my sense organs, my organs of action, all of these are abodatmakani. Their nature is inert. They don't themselves enjoy consciousness, because if they did enjoy consciousness, there would be two of us. Like I, the conscious being, would be aware of my mind, illuminating my mind, and my mind enjoying its own consciousness would be, you know, aware of me perhaps, and then we would be two. They would say, I would be saying, could you please do this? Could you please do think that? And the mind would say, no, I don't know, I'll think about it. How are you today? How are you today? Well, I'm fine, how are you? Because it also is a conscious entity. Right? There's not two conscious entities here. There's just simply me. From the standpoint of the mind enjoys me. Right? It has no consciousness of itself. I am its self. And even as Ajnanis, even without any knowledge, we don't think of the mind as being someone else. We think of the mind as being me, because I am, in fact, its truth. But we don't realize, what we need knowledge for is, oh yes, the mind is me, its being is me, its consciousness is me, so that I can say, yes, I am the mind. And the mind can say, I am the conscious being. But it can definitely say that. And when it says that, it's correct as when the pot says, I am the clay, because the pot is the clay. There's nothing else there. The pot is only the clay. And my mind is only me. There is nothing else there. But the difference is, between me and the mind, is that my being doesn't depend upon the mind. at all. I don't think. I simply am. When you're with yourself, even now, your mind and your body and your perceptions, they don't cover yourself at all. You know, it's not like there's this there's like this bag over me or something covering me. Nothing is covering me at all. But in the midst of this experience that I'm having, with all of my sense organs, with all of the thoughts that are taking place, with my organs of action, all of this activity that is engaging in the world, right, is that's all taking place, all enjoying me fully, because I am itself, but at the same time that all of this activity is taking place, I'm not doing anything. My being, I simply am. And this is something that we have to get used to noticing, because that's an ever-present reality. Your eyes are seeing, your ears are hearing, in one verse in the Gita it says that the eyelids are blinking, right? My eyes are seeing, my mouth is talking, my hands are moving, my ears are hearing. All of what we call this upadi, all of this these conditioning adjuncts, because I take myself to be them, all of this activity is taking place, enjoying myself completely, like the pot enjoys the clay or has the clay for its being. But while all of this activity is taking place, I am, I simply am. And this is just a beautiful thing to be noticed. There's two things happening. There's the silence, stillness, changelessness of your being, and all of the activity of your upadis. But what this means for you in terms of your experience, because the mind, the sense organs, etc., have you for their self, they are never away from you in any way, nor can they cover you. It's just some viveka, some discrimination that is necessary for you, a discrimination between, in this moment of experience, that which is me, absolutely, absolutely changeless and always the same, whose nature is so strong and pure and full and complete. I am always here amidst all of the activity and sometimes turmoil, you know, of the mind and body and sense organs. And once the mind recognizes that truth, the fact of it, then my mind has this beautiful refuge of myself. And so as it gets, the mind sometimes can get kind of lost, it gets lost in itself, it's worrying about this, it's busy getting involved in this and that and this and that, worried about this, worried about that, projecting all your likes and dislikes onto the world and thinking, what am I going to do if I don't get this? And I need this in order to be happy and whole, and things are not working out. So as it builds up into this roar, you know, you just say, oh, come home. You just come back, come home, be with me. You just come home and be with me. Whenever your mind feels, it gets lost a little bit, you say, it's okay, just come home, just be with me. And there is no distance between the mind and me. There's no distance. So this coming home is not a long trek. It's just simply waking up from, you got lost in the samsara of your mind. And for a moment, because the mind is so used to getting lost in its own samsara, gets lost, all you need to bring it home is just to bring it home. Like you can... there is no distance. There's no distance. And so it's just the most simple, just a moment of alertness. That's all it is. A moment of alertness in your home. A moment of knowledge, you know, because your mind kind of got lost. The manas, it's like the manas, the fluctuating, you know, traveling mind got lost in itself. You know, in its own thoughts. And the buddhi means you're more your intellect, the one who's the carrier of your knowledge, recognizes what's going on. The manas is getting itself in trouble. You know, getting itself caught and lost and lost in its emotions and whatnot, the buddhi recognizes the what you, the one who has knowledge, just says, no, no, you're going, don't worry, come, just come back, it'll be okay. Just come back now. And so it goes, the menace wakes up and comes home. And then it feels safe and protected because it's come back to the wholeness of your own being. And no problem. Your mind, your emotions, feelings can turn on a dime. Your thoughts can turn on a dime. If they get lost just because of habitual, it's like a habitual way of behavior because of beginningless ignorance. Beginningless goes a long, that lasts a long time. That beginninglessness, that beginningless ignorance you bring, but it's right now in the present that ignorance is being removed. And so there's a lot of habitual behavior on the part of the mind. So you can't think like this, that you gain knowledge, you become clear, and then you think, okay, now everything is fine, I'm enlightened. All is well. You know, you think that and you feel so happy, and then, you know, you walk out of the room and 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, the good old mind comes back with its habitual way of behavior. That is normal. To expect something else isn't really fair, you know. What has to happen is that, but it's not a big deal. You should take that for granted. And then just like you're raising a child has to learn how to walk. You know, it goes through a lot of different iterations as it learns how to walk. And then Swamiji says it keeps, you know, it falls on its bottom, you know. And then it gets itself up and walks, boom. Gets itself up, walks, boom. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't fall anymore. And it looks around and he says, wow, I'm not falling anymore. You know, and it feels so proud of itself. But it felt proud of itself even when it was getting back up and walking a little bit more. It was so pleased. It was pleased because the parents were pleased. What if the parents said, oh my God. What is wrong with you? You stand up and you fall down. No normal parent would do that. A normal parent would feel just like the baby. Beautiful. So beautiful. You know? And that's how we have to be toward our mind. When you gain this knowledge, is such an incredible blessing. It's such a profound blessing. It's a blessing in your mind. It's now that inner, when I talk about we all talk about the inner friend, or that best friend. Really, the swarupa, the best friend is your own being. And when your buddhi, your mind, the one who is carrying the knowledge, and we say, let that be a best friend, your best friend, the essence of that best friend is the atma, right? When we say, let the buddhi be your best friend, it's because the buddhi that's carrying the knowledge is the one that talks, you know? The one who talks and realizes and has something to say about what you're doing and what others are doing. So let your buddhi be an expression of yourself. The buddhi, as you gain knowledge, the buddhi becomes a voice for the nature of your being. And the nature of your being is what we call abhayam. Your being evokes no fear. It's impossible for the Atma to evoke any type of fear. It is absolutely, absolutely benign, absolutely whole and kind by nature. It's absolutely approachable. Like when you're contemplating and just being with yourself, you don't go, oh no, is that who I am? Because that could happen. You know? When you contemplate, you know, when you're contemplating just being with yourself, there's only beauty there. There's nothing else. There's beauty, there's wholeness, you know. There's that all is well with me without any words. It's your very, what we call the swarupa. All the way I'm describing this is all what we mean by ananda. Ananda is that absolute, all is well with me. There is nothing in the world I would change. It is the most beloved. There's nothing, you know, in the world we could make it a little bit better. could tweak it a little bit. Even my mind and my body, my sense organs, I could always make them a little better. Could work out more, you know, study more, maybe contemplate and exercise my mind more so it has more capacity. Can always do a little bit more. Always, 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 you know. But that's not true for you. And you know it also. As you are with your own being and you ask yourself, now how could I improve this? How could I improve myself? I don't think I can improve it. I don't think there's any way that I would want to make it different. I can't think of that. It's impossible actually to conceptualize that. What could I do to make it different? Now you certainly can do that with your mind, and with your sense organs, and with your body, and with your friends, and with your relationships. It would be unfortunate if your mind has a tendency to think that way, because it's endless. It's endless. I could always tweak this. I could always make this a little better. I could make this a little better. And then I could never just enjoy, you know, the world as it is, if I'm thinking of how to improve. So I hope we have to limit our desire to improve things a little bit, you know, and more learn how to just kind of appreciate what is, with its lights and its shadows, you know, and then just do what we can to help. Swamiji often thinks, you know, how can I help? And that's very benign. How can I help? What can I, anything that I need to do, anything I can do, just how can I help? It's not so much, how can I make this better, as though it's imperfect. Everything is imperfect. No, nothing is steady. But just how can I help? No. Now, what if you have that attitude toward your body and toward your sense organs and toward your mind, you know, and toward your reactions and toward your hurts and toward your pains and toward the little ones inside? You say, how can I help? Or come, you can be with me. There's no fear in that. There's no fear. There's only love in it, you know. So if somebody's suffering, it would be, how can I help? Not, how can I improve you? It's, how can I help? But the beautiful thing that we have to learn as humans is that that same buddhi, that how can I help, or just come, you can be with me, has to be turned toward myself. That I should be my best friend. Yeah. All of the things that I do, all of the things that I think, all of the mistakes that I make, the buddhi should be your best friend. Best friend is not critical. Best friend wants to help, you know? Or praises when praised. You did a good job there, you know? That was good. Yeah. Don't worry. If you make a mistake, you just apologize. It's easy. That's an important thing that we learn also. Make some mistake, you lose your temper, you act foolishly or whatever. You say, don't worry, you just apologize. Then, you know, apologize next time, you probably won't do that. And if you do, then you'll apologize again. It's all. It's so very simple, you know. So, it says, so that's the Nishkampam Ekam. Then Nitya Bodha Swarupam is the same as the Nitya Upalabdhi. So my nature is Ekam, one. I'm only one. I am completely steady. There's no change in me ever at any time. And really, I love clay pot. Clay pot is my favorite. I love clay pot because the pot is obviously nothing but clay. And what we have to realize is that the buddhi, the mind, it is nothing but me. What this means for you is that this notion that there's a capital S self and a small S self, like I'm the little self, and I have to have an experience of the big S self, which is Brahman, the little self is Atman, the big self is Brahman. This is so not true. this little self and big self is not there. There's only one self, and that is me. And that self needs to be realized as Brahman. And it's not, Brahman doesn't mean big or little. It means infinite. It means the one self that is there as the self of all beings, the self of the whole universe, the self that is free of any type of size, the self that is infinite because there is nothing else. It's like the pot and the clay. The pot, the clay is infinite in reference to the pot. There is nothing else but clay there. Right? There's nothing but clay. So the Atma, myself, is infinite in the sense that there is nothing else there. Everything else, all of these names and forms that we experience, only have me for their being. And so this me as ekam is something that's nitya bodha. It's nitya bodha means this being that I am, this conscious being that I am, is really one without a second. And the consciousness that I enjoy, he uses the example, is like heat to fire, where, because see, we will think like this body enjoys consciousness, so consciousness becomes an attribute of the body, right? Because the body is many other things, so consciousness is just an attribute. So when I say this Atma, myself, and then I say myself is consciousness or enjoys consciousness, I can think of consciousness as an attribute to me. But it's not an attribute of myself, as though there's a self which has some consciousness as a quality. That's not so. The consciousness is the self. It's not a quality of the self. It is the self. Right? It's not an attribute. You could say heat is not an attribute of fire. That's when they, now we have so many different types of heat in science and all that, but now when they're using heat and fire, what they're saying is the heat itself is the fire. Look at the heat as the fire, not that the heat is an attribute of the fire, it's the very nature of the fire. So when we say the Atma, myself, my consciousness, the being itself, is what I am. It's not that there's some self that has existence and has consciousness. It's that I am consciousness itself. There is nothing else there. Just conscious being. Oh, you mean there's being there too? It's not that there's being there too. It's that consciousness is not non-existent. Consciousness is being, and being is consciousness, because consciousness is, right? Consciousness exists. And so consciousness and being are one and the same thing. So why do I say that? Consciousness and being are one and the same thing. Because there's nothing else that has being. There's not nothing else that has being. Why? Because in this world of time and space that we experience, and I experience it as this body, mind, sense organs within time and space, in this world here, now, everything that exists comes into existence and goes out of existence because it's subject to change. There's nothing in the creation that is not subject to change, right? But anything, without exception, anything that changes, when it changes, that change is the death of the prior moment, right? And the birth of the new moment, of the new thing, the thing that has just been born by that change. And then when that thing changes, there is death of that thing and the birth of the next thing, whatever that may be. See what I mean? So change itself is always bordered by non-existence. Why I say non-existence? Because if something has been born, an actuality, if something has been born, then it wasn't there before. Right? If you say, oh yes, it was there before, well, the thing that has been born wasn't there before. Right? Because otherwise it wouldn't be born. So you can't say that it was there before. look at how we use examples like the clay pot. If there's a ball of clay and you make it into a pot, we say the pot has been born. And you say, no, no, the clay was there before. Exactly. The clay was there before. The clay is what exists, not the pot. The pot depends upon the clay for its existence. The clay was not born, right? The pot was born. The pot has no being at all apart from the clay. This is our situation with anything that is born. That thing that is born has no being at all because it has a prior condition of not being there. Nothing can come out of non-existence because non-existence isn't there for it to come out of, right? And so anything that is born has to be dependent upon something which actually is. But if the things that it is dependent upon themselves have been born, then those things are dependent upon something else. And if that which it's dependent on, if those things have been born, and see, this is going to go back into an infinite regress. If those things are dependent on something that, you know, that itself has been born, then that is dependent on something. So in the end, you have to get to existence being itself, which has no prior condition. And in fact, being itself is ever-present, not as an object. It is what is present as the very self of all objects, including myself. It is myself. I say it is myself. If the pot could talk and the couch could talk, they'd say, yes, it is myself. All beings, the only reason we get to say it is because we have a voice. Because yes, being is myself, because being is the only thing that does not have a prior condition of non-being. Right? So being has not been born. And what is the very nature of my being? My being is consciousness. Not consciousness of something. That involves my mind and my sense organs to be conscious of something. Consciousness of something requires some sort of an upadhi to have a seer-seen relationship. I am not consciousness of something. I am conscious being. Why is being consciousness? Well, because consciousness is being. But what do you mean? Neither consciousness nor being can be objectified. I am a conscious being. The consciousness cannot be objectified. The being cannot be objectified. What do I mean? I can't say here. It would be so easy as a teacher, I could say, here, see this being? All of you pull out your own being and take a look. Just pull it out and look. You haven't known how to pull that out. Pull it out, take a look. And why don't we pull out the consciousness too? Yeah? Take a look at it. No. Non-objectifiable. It is its own experience because consciousness is its own experience because it is consciousness. Why is it an experience? It's consciousness. Is consciousness conscious of consciousness? No, it's not conscious of consciousness, as there's those two consciousnesses inside. This consciousness is conscious of this consciousness back and forth. No, it's just consciousness. I am just a conscious being. When you contemplate and you're just being with yourself, you simply are. You are your own light. And that light is, that being, that conscious being is. And you can't separate them. So you can even say, consciousness is, and it is the only thing that is. Just like I can say, existence is, it is the only thing that is, because it has no prior condition. If it has a prior condition, then it's going to depend on something in order for it to be. Otherwise, its prior condition is non-existence. See, it's a really... This being that I am is not an object within time and space to have a prior condition. If you're not in time and space, you don't have a prior condition. You simply are, you know. And so then you ask, okay, but why did I come into being? Well, you never came into being because you don't have a prior condition. The being that you are is the being that you are. It's free of time. It is the very bottom line of all experience. It's the bottom line of the whole creation. So who is the bottom line? I am the bottom line. My being, which is not objectifiable, is the conscious being which, in fact, the entire creation enjoys. Why do you say the entire creation enjoys? Or is the truth of the entire creation, not just of me? Because the entire creation that we experience has no being of its own. It cannot have a being of its own because everything in it is continually changing. And even though everything in the creation is continually changing, every experience you have is continually changing. Look at the language we use. Comes into being and goes out of being. Yeah, this comes into being, goes out of being, comes into being, goes out of being. That's perfectly correct. Comes into being and goes out of being. Being is what is. It's not being comes into being and goes out of being. Consciousness doesn't come into consciousness and go out of consciousness. Not consciousness of something, just consciousness. It doesn't have prior condition, it simply is. And the whole creation enjoys it. Enjoys it as has it for its very truth. Then, of course, the question comes. I want to go there. Okay, 2 minutes. Yeah. Then, of course, the question comes, well, you know, well, Swamiji always says, Swamiji. Swamiji jokes like that. Swamiji. You know, if that's true, you know, then why isn't everything conscious? Why isn't this conscious? And why isn't this conscious? And why isn't this conscious? Why aren't my glasses conscious? Why aren't my clothes conscious? Why are only human beings and animals enjoy consciousness? If everything is only consciousness, you know, why doesn't everything enjoy it? You know? We say, well, actually, consciousness is the self of everything, even the rug, even space. It's the self of everything. But consciousness, your being, is not a knower. That subject-object relationship is not there for consciousness. There's just self-evident conscious being, which is me. That's why, you know, I said when you are just sitting in meditation and you're just, you know, becoming just focusing on your own presence, you recognize that I am not doing anything. I am not knowing anything. I am simply me, conscious being. To be doing, to be knowing, I need a mind. I need sense organs. I need my organs of action. To be doing, to be thinking, to be knowing, I need these instruments. These instruments exist as part of this body, mind, sense organs complex, which exists within time and space, in this creation, allowing me to have a subject-object relationship with all of the other people and with all of the other things. I have what is called, as a human being, or as an animal, or as a plant in a more limited capacity, limited from our standpoint, actually. They're very complex. So. But from our standpoint, they can't talk and walk in the same way that we do, so we say they have some limitation. But actually, I have what's called a subtle body. A subtle body which transmigrates and which carries with it the subtle sense organs and the subtle organs of action and the prana which enlivens this body, which from its own standpoint is inert, like the chair or the rug, right? But I am enlivened with a subtle body that allows me to have a mind and sense organs and to reflect consciousness and take myself to be a conscious being, where the chair doesn't have a subtle body. It is just something tamas for me to sit on and to do things with. It is itself. Swamiji will joke and say, poor chair, if it had a subtle body, it would be saying, don't sit on me. Please don't sit on me. The rug would be, you're walking on me. You're walking on me. And the wood would say, you're putting nails in me, for heaven's sake, stop. They don't have a subtle body. And so because of that, in this world, we say, oh, there's some, I am a conscious being and these things aren't. So then how on earth could everything just be consciousness? How could all the swarupa of the whole creation be consciousness? Because consciousness is not knowing anything. Consciousness simply is. It is its own light. It is its own wholeness. I am my own fullness. If you recognize now, if you just gently tune into your own presence, you're not doing anything. You're not knowing anything. You need your eyes and your ears to be knowing and to be hearing. Even if you're what do you think happens to you if you lose your eyes? You become a blind person. But you are still there. You lose your ears, an instrument. You are still there. Even you lose your mind, you're schizophrenic, or you lose your mind and you become senile. You are still there. You know, your being is still there. Everybody says, why are you thinking like that? Oh my God, I hope I never become senile like that, because the mind is just going crazy, you know. But you are still there. And in fact, nothing is happening to you. It is exactly the same self. Exactly the same self. Illumining the blind eyes, the eyes that don't work, illumining the ears that don't hear, illumining the mind that can't think well, you know? Or illumining the pristine 20/20 vision, or illumining the pristine perfect hearing, or the mind which is the mind of a brilliant genius. I'm not doing anything. I am just the self, you know, which gives life and consciousness to every mind, to every being, the whole creation. From the standpoint, the only difference is, like the wood and, say, the wood and the chair, etc., they are not having these upadis of sense organs and mind. Their being is still only me. It's not like this chair, this couch, it has an experience of me, and you have an experience me, and you have an experience me, and the grasshoppers have an experience of me. No, they don't, none of them, including you, these upadis, none of them have an experience of me. I am the experience of me. The Atma, the self that you are, is the me experience. It doesn't belong to the upadi. Do you think your upadi, like your mind, is giving you the me experience? No. And it's not giving, the couch doesn't need, nobody, the couch or the rug or your body, mind, sense organs or the animals or the plants, their upadi does not contribute to me, the me experience. The me experience is consciousness. It never comes and goes. It is never shared. That's why it is personal. The me experience is one without a second. So with Ishwara, the Lord means the whole creation enjoys me. And the me experience, that is the me experience of Ishwara, does that belong to Ishwara? Ishwara is the pot. The me experience belongs to the clay, right? Not to Ishwara. When we say Ishwara, we're talking about this me that I am, this me experience that I am, in light of the whole manifest creation. The whole manifest creation is like an infinite mind that enjoys me. But the me belongs to consciousness. If I say the me, what makes me, like when I'm saying the word me, it's landing on the self-experience that is consciousness. And that self-experience is ekam. Ekam means it's one. It's one non-dual, one without a second, one me. And so we tend to think, well, I am reflecting me, the me experience, the consciousness. And you say, and I am reflecting the me experience, consciousness. No, that isn't true. You're not reflecting it, you are it. You are it, and there's only one. There's only one me. And there are many minds and many sense organs. But when you say, I am, those words, I am, are landing only on the Atma, which is yourself. So everything else is jada. We say jada means it's anatmaka. It means it itself has no independent consciousness. There is no second consciousness. Even the idea of reflection of consciousness can be misleading, because then say the sun is reflecting like in a mirror, the mirror of the mind, then you think, yeah, I am the little reflection of the sun there. And then the big sun, you know, is the big self, and I'm this little reflection. And that's not what's meant. There is no, I am the reflection. There's no sense. Like say if you're looking in the mirror, and then your face is there in the mirror. Where are you? Are you in the mirror? Is the little you in the mirror, in the big mirror in your face? No, no. But here, because your thoughts, as though enjoy awareness, we say it's sukshma, it's sattva, because they enjoy awareness. They're illumined. The thoughts are illumined. Right? But it's not that you are there in the thought as something else, as any kind of subject-object relationship or big self, small self. Your self-experience is only one. There's only one Atma, which is Brahman. Om.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo